Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn. Make sure you like this video. Leave a nice comment if you'd be so kind. If you're listening on a place like Spotify, we'd really appreciate a five-star review that helps more people find us. I'm really excited about today's episode. We are going to hear from a man who has had radical just life change, and God has taken him from confusion to clarity. This is our guest, Jason Mellard. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brady. Thank you so much for bringing me on to the podcast today.
Absolutely. You have your own podcast, and God is using you to speak into the lives of other people and help other men along in this journey. And so we are excited to hear about your ministry. But first, we want to hear your story. I love hearing stories about God just providing grace and hope in people's lives. And your story has some difficult themes in it. You had some hard circumstances as a child that caused massive amounts of confusion. And so I am excited to hear about that, just so then we can hear about the hope that God has given you through it.
Absolutely. I love that. You know, and Brady, I want to start with just thanking you for the work that you're doing. You know, you're speaking on these cultural issues that are not easy. And talk about confusing, all the different voices we hear from the media, from culture, from different church views, from our own body sometimes that are, you know, telling us to do things that we don't really want to do. And it can be so overwhelming. And what I really like to do is to kind of get in the head of people like myself or my dad, who also experienced same-sex attraction, my clients, just folks, and what that really feels like inside so that I can empathize in a greater way and really see how to speak to somebody kind of from the inside out. Because I think that when we're in a state of confusion, often we need somebody to come into that fog of confusion with us and kind of hold our hand to say, hey, you're not alone. You know, you're in this with somebody else. Because it can be easy to feel like we're hearing different voices outside of this fog tell us, you know, who we should be and what we should think and do and, you know, all kinds of noise. But I just want somebody to see me. I just want to be known, to be understood, and to have somebody just kind of walk alongside me first. And then let's explore this together. So that's what I want to do as I share my story, is to kind of get into the heads of a few folks and to, you know, share what that was like and where clarity came from.
Awesome.
Like you said.
And I love that phrase, helping people from the inside out. It's like we don't want to just control their behavior and behavior modification. We want to get into and understand what's going on in their heart, in their mind, in their soul. And so we can walk alongside with them in that.
Absolutely. And confusion has looked different over the last several decades. When I think about my dad, when he was a teenager, nobody talked about same-sex attraction. They didn't even use that word. All you heard was gay and queer and, you know, different names that were called. And, you know, I can just imagine what he felt on the inside. Like, oh my gosh, you know, somebody knew about these attractions I have towards other guys, I just know I would be rejected. Big questions like, you know, what's wrong with me? What does this mean about who I am and what's going to happen in my future? All those questions can be so uncomfortable. And I think for him and many, you know, men, who didn't know what to do. And so he just shut the door on it and didn't think about it anymore. But it was always there and always building up over time. And it was just more evidence that he was separate and other than other people, other guys, from God. Sometimes I think it felt that way. And he didn't have anybody to share that with. You know, I don't know when it was that he first told somebody about his attractions, probably, you know, with my mom, you know, later into their marriage. But it can be very lonely to be in that place of fog by yourself and not being able to share kind of your life experience, those emotions, those attractions that you have with somebody else, and to be holding back. Kind of, it's not our identity, those attractions, but it's a big part of our life experience. So I've really felt, you know, for him. And we want to press them down a lot of times, that confusion, those attractions of things that just feel so big in us. It's like, you know, we're trying to push down a beach ball, right? It doesn't work. And over time, it just pops back up. And so, you know, that didn't work for my dad after a while. And when he became a pastor, we went to this little Baptist church and he had that just come out sideways. He ended up looking at porn quite a bit and acting out with other guys. that led to moving away from being a pastor. And, you know, all of that just came up. And I, you know, it was hard for him in that time to say, okay, I try to push this down on my life, but I can't ignore it. And I don't know what to do. And he didn't have somebody, you know, walking through him that whole time. He had a lot of people yelling at him, or at least I think that's how he perceived it. Often, you know, maybe somebody is speaking from outside the fog, just like, hey, here's some truth, but it feels like yelling. And I think, you know, for so long, he felt that shame over his attractions, over his sin, you know, whether it was from other people or that he interpreted God as somebody that was disappointed and distant from him. And it was easy to try and escape, just to, you know, take care of that pain.
But absolutely. And you know, when we keep those secrets, the enemy blackmails us with them, and they grow in our head, and we start to believe lies about ourselves, and it just escalates. It's like a snowball rolling down a hill when we have these desires and we're in a place where we don't think that we can tell anyone, and the secrecy never helps us.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And then you look at other guys that seem to have it all together. You know, how are they just walking through life on air? You know, it seems like, you know, they have attractions towards women. They don't seem to be, you know, running off of insecurities and, you know, limiting beliefs. I just want to be like the other guys. And so he ended up, like I said, leaving the pastorate. And over time, though, even though my mother and him stayed together, he said, later on, this is after I finished grad school, that, you know, I think maybe there's more that I want to express of who I am. And I think that he thought that going into the gay lifestyle at that time would be an answer to that. You know, because it's hard to be uncomfortable. You know, we want to get answers. You know, he got a lot of healing during those several years after he had to step down from ministry. But there was still kind of that ache there of like, I want to be fully known. And I still am uncertain and uncomfortable. But I think over time, you know, we really need to learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because otherwise we're going to try to escape, or we're going to slap on a label that's just not true. You know, it can be easy to say, all right, I'm gay. You know, this is just who I am, you know, born this way. And that provides a sense of relief. And when my dad finally put on that label, I do think that gave him quite a bit of relief, and he went into the lifestyle and was pretty happy for a while. And then over time it deteriorated, and I'll maybe get into that a little bit later. And so for me, you know, growing up, there was a little bit more talk about same-sex attraction. It wasn't quite as taboo, but I still didn't know what to do. And I think about going into high school and in college, I wanted to figure out what to do with these big emotions, these big sensations that I had. I would, you know, go to my pastor, a couple other folks, even my dad, to say, you know, what do I do? I don't get it. This is really uncomfortable. And I had, you know, some classmates that tried to help me out, you know, to get me out of confusion and into clarity by telling me I was gay. And I didn't really know what to do with that. It wasn't helpful, because I didn't feel that way. I just knew that I had these feelings and attractions towards guys, even though I also really admired women too, and admired being with them. And I had to figure out, you know, which way I wanted to go in life, just about the same time my dad was trying to figure out which way he wanted to go in life. And so it's really interesting to kind of parallel the direction that he took versus the direction I ended up taking, which was to marry a woman and, you know, grow a family. But there was more confusion that happened in life, and I'd love to talk a little bit about when I was younger and some of the experiences there.
Absolutely. And so, so you're growing up struggling, and your dad is struggling at the same time. And he later, you know, just came out of the closet and started to live as gay and accepted the label and the lifestyle. And so that added more confusion to you. But what were some of the aspects then of your childhood that led to some confusion? You know, and I want to, you know, clarify that sometimes there's like sexuality is so complicated. Sometimes there's very specific things in our life that we can pinpoint in detail. It's like, okay, that event, that relationship, that dynamic definitely aided in my same-sex attraction and confusion and spiritual, emotional confusion. And then sometimes it's a little less clear. And so, I don't want to pigeonhole anyone and say, oh, you have to identify exactly what, you know, caused all your confusion. And it might be very helpful for a lot of people. But we don't want to make assumptions that there's very specific things in someone's life that they need to try to pinpoint. But in your life, there were some specific circumstances in your childhood that did really give you a lot of confusion.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you made. I'm not all about saying, okay, this is the formula for how you develop same-sex attraction. You know, there are certain patterns, and for me, it was helpful to understand what some of those patterns were, but not a requirement to figure that out. I do think, though, that I thought another man was going to be an answer to some of the confusion that I felt. If I wasn't sure where I belonged in the world of men, you know, maybe this other guy, if he invited me in intimately, was going to settle that confusion. I wouldn't have to wonder anymore. Do I belong? Do I have what it takes, you know, to be a man? Am I going to be okay? Because he would say, yeah, you're in the club. And it would feel so true in my body if we were in it together and engaged in that way. I just wouldn't believe anything else, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, for those of us who've dealt with same-sex attraction, you know, some people have mistakenly thought that, like, we're rejecting women in some way. And I've talked to hundreds of men. It's like, no, usually our issues aren't with women. Our issues are with men and this disconnect that we have with men. And I've always described it as that men felt like such a foreign creature to me. It's like, and I was like mystified by them. Like, I don't feel like I'm quite one of them. And I think, you know, a lot of then kids growing up today are much more pushed towards like transgenderism. When we're growing up, that wasn't really an option like it is today, even though there were some people who struggle with that. Then it, you know, when you felt like ostracized by men or just like, I don't belong, but there's this fascination with them and you deeply want to connect with them and you want to feel a little bit exposed and vulnerable and accepted, and this, you know, emotional sexual connection is a way of doing that that ultimately doesn't work, and it's obviously unhealthy, and as Christians we've sinful. But how do you see that develop? What were your views of men? What gaps did you have with them that your heart really wanted to fill in some way?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Men were always so mysterious to me. Mm. It took a while for women to become mysterious. You know, I had a mom and a sister. I feel like I was around women a lot. And I was like, okay. But I was really just trying to get past the hurdle of figuring out what it means to be a man. And I think everybody goes through that. But I think maybe a lot of guys check that box off a little sooner than I did.
Yeah.
By the time puberty hits, they're like, all right, I'm bored with my buddies here. You know, who else, what else is out there? And all of a sudden women are coming into their femininity and they're like, oh, you know, who are these creatures? And I start to get curious and mysterious about them. But yeah, guys were just so puzzling. You know, how can he walk around with such confidence? How does he always have something to say? You know, how can he throw a ball and it actually get to where it's supposed to go? you know, how can he just laugh and express himself in a carefree way and not worry about what people think? I was just mesmerized, puzzled, because for me, I was constantly editing myself, and you know, I saw and interacted with the world through some kind of invisible lens. You know, something happened and I asked myself, well, who do I need to be? And then I tried to be that person, and then I'd go out and filter, you know, so much. I was never actually present in life. Mm-hmm. And I learned that so early on. It just kind of was baked into who I was. And I look to other guys to constantly say, you know, who do I need to be? And I think my sense of self wasn't fanned into flame in a beautiful way, you know, growing up. I didn't have a lot of folks in my life and specifically with, you know, with my father that said, tell me more, Jason, tell me all about yourself. You know, what are you excited about? What gets you jazzed up? You know, what are your interests and how can I really support you in that? And just, you know, what do you need, you know, from me? Let's talk about it. Somebody to get on my level and just say, you know, I like you just for who you are, you know, and I am just so glad, you know, that you are mine. And he would say, you know, beautiful words and say, I love you. He was good about saying that, but I wanted somebody, you know, to really be present with me where I didn't feel like I had to say just the right things. I didn't have to tiptoe, that there wasn't a time constraint, you know, that he had all the time in the world for me. And I think I really needed that to be able to kind of launch off, whether it was into elementary school for the first time or, you know, into high school or off, you know, going into college and beyond with the sense that, you know, somebody's got me. I've got somebody has my back and I can, you know, move into life with greater self-agency.
Yeah. Just a sense of security. And, you know, I think that I know that you have so much grace for your father and, you know, maybe you can share a little bit more about, you know, where his choices took him versus where your choices then have taken you, but you have so much grace for your father and I appreciate that. But, you know, some of our dads just didn't grow up being taught how to have emotional connection and being able to talk about feelings and they loved us. They just weren't ever equipped to, see us and connect with us deeply. And then that affects different people in different ways. And so you can have two brothers who grew up in the exact same environment with the same, maybe, you know, emotional dysfunction, abuse, whatever it is in the household. One of them develops same-sex attraction, one of them doesn't, but he responds differently to the same set of circumstances because he has a different personality and a different heart. And for some of us, our hearts responded to our circumstances in a way that made us gave us certain insecurities. And but then maybe our brother, I don't think that you have a brother. I think you have a sister. I have a brother, but gosh, we grew up in the same environments, but our hearts respond differently. Mm-hmm. And I developed same-sex attraction. My brother didn't. He had his own set of issues. I have my issues because we're different people. And so we responded to the same unideal circumstances differently. And that doesn't mean it's better or worse, but we all have our own lies and confusion to work out and to try to understand.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we don't respond to what happens to us. We respond to the meaning that we give it. And, you know, I can look at the things that happened to me in my life, whether it was sexual abuse from my father, this emotional disconnection, like I shared about. And, you know, those things were really tragic. But I think the response that I had to it, I didn't know any better as a kid, you know, just whatever pops in your head, you just go with that. But maybe it was through the lens of my, you know, certain temperament that I just said it, oh, you know, what's wrong with me? And that's not uncommon for kids, of course, by any means. When, in the reality, it was about dad. But I took it on, you know, of myself. Like, I just told my dad that I didn't want him to touch me in that place anymore. And he said, well, okay, well, I guess we're not going to touch at all, you know, and we wouldn't hug for a couple weeks. And of course, I said, well, that means, and it just all happened in an instant, that I am not somebody, you know, worth being patient for and not worth, you know, connecting with, that it's better off when I'm not around. I need to just not say anything. My voice is too loud, even if it's a whisper, too much. And those are the things that impacted me, you know, for so long. And I think I would live out of those beliefs, you know, like I need to stay on the sidelines. I can't, you know, speak up too loudly. People are not better off when I'm around. And those things felt so true that when I saw other guys or other people acting in a way that didn't seem aligned with that belief that this was integrated into me. I was like, how do they operate that way? And that was so much of what that mystery was. But, you know, the enemy is great at taking those places of vulnerability and speaking lies into us. And it takes a lot of time to start to unravel and uncover those lies. And then, you know, once we do, it still takes more time for them to begin not feeling quite so true. That's something I work on with my clients. Yes. It's like, okay, you know, we know the truth. We know the high school answer. We've uncovered a lot of this stuff, but how do we like integrate it so that it feels more true? So we're not wasting energy trying to live out of something that our body and our nervous system doesn't believe is a fact, you know?
Yes. It's, you know, when we understand the lies we've believed, it's not just a one time, light bulb that goes off and then it's gone. We have to work throughout our lifetime to not go back to that belief and not let it affect us. And sometimes we have to go back and continue to re-examine and remind ourselves of the gospel, remind ourselves of the truth, remind ourselves of who we actually are.
Yeah, for sure. And you want the people that know you the most, you want your parents to remind you who you are. But it felt the opposite. And my dad was a pastor, like I said, of that little church. And I learned a lot of things about God that was head knowledge. But, you know, what I really wanted to catch is that, man, God just wants to hang out with you. You know, Jason, God thinks you're really cool. How could I catch that if I wasn't getting that from my dad? My mom, who is just beautiful, but often, you know, she contributed to wanting us to all not be too much together, you know, tiptoe again around dad, who was a little bit, an explosive personality. So, but yeah, we want to believe that God is somebody that didn't just, you know, create us to not sin or to, you know, do the right things, be a good Christian, smile all the time. That's what I thought God wanted of me. But, you know, he put unique things inside of each of us that he is excited about allowing us to unlock, that he can unlock when we just say yes to him and what's possible when we choose to believe what is true about him and about ourselves and, mm-hmm. and about our future. And I like to think that, you know, God is, he's not just ahead of us on the path, leading us and saying, hey, you know, follow me. Of course he is. He's our Lord and Savior. I'm following him. But I think even at the same time, and I don't know how this works, you know, God, he's everywhere, right? But he's right next to me holding my hand as well, saying, hey, you know, we're in this together. Let's partner. I'm not going anywhere. And that is so cool to me that when I talked about that fog of confusion before, that's what God does. You know, he just walks right into that fog. And there can be so much beauty about that fog. You know, confusion doesn't have to be something that's scary or that we judge or that we just want to go away. But, you know, confusion gives us an opportunity to slow down a little bit. When we're in fog, you know, and you're driving, you got to slow down so you don't run into stuff. And maybe that causes us to look a little bit closer. You know, but fog requires us to get a lot more clarity over what is true. And there's so many different competing things, whether it's the words of my, you know, father or what I felt like that meant or the lies of the enemy, you know, when I kind of slow down and say, hey, you know, wait a second here, I'm going to get really clear on what is true. And then I think also it means so much more when you're holding somebody's hand in that place of confusion or fog than it would, you know, in sunshine and you're all just walking together. You know, you need them. If they know where to go and they're in the fog with you, I'm just not going to let go of their hand. I think that's the place that God wants us in so much of the time.
Absolutely. That gives us a great vision for walking alongside people. Go back to your story a little bit. And so your dad was a pastor. There was some abuse involved. Then the same-sex attraction developing. How did that atmosphere affect how you viewed God, right? And just, I mean, that's not a very good experience of Christianity.
Yes.
Growing up as a pastor's kid with kind of an abusive father, and your family, usually then your family is pretending and your dad isn't living in any type of authentic, real repentant Christianity because he's putting on an image so he can maintain his job as a pastor, I'm assuming, is kind of how that usually goes. So how is then your that just affecting your view of God? And I think it's remarkable that you then end up choosing God and not your desires. And so, but tell us a little more about that process.
I want to contrast two different doors. One is the front door of the church that we were at, where my dad would stand there after a sermon and he would just, you know, greet people on the way into church, but then on the way out, people would, you know, talk to him and say, you know, thank you, Pastor Charlie, really enjoyed that message. And he would interact with them. And it was just a kind of a beautiful atmosphere. But then there was his bedroom door at home that he would have locked and shut. It would be on the inside of that, looking at porn, gay porn. And I was on the outside, you know, not good enough, apparently. And I think the contrast between those two doors, and that's just conceptual for that experience of, you know, what other people saw of him versus what I experienced and what his family experienced so much of the time, was very hard. You know, I wanted to be on the inside of the door. And sometimes I was, in a bad way. You know, he's like, hey, Jason, you know, come here. And that was, you know, really confusing. But, you know, I don't know what was worse, not being let in or, you know, being let in and having, you know, see things happen that weren't helpful.
Yeah. And so many, you know, kids who experience some type of abuse, one of the confusing aspects of it is that some of them, part of their heart likes the attention, right? And so in some cases, and I don't want to put everyone in a box, but that can be so confusing on, like, I want my dad to notice me and I want to feel cared for by him. So then when it's done in a perverted, abusive way, that adds to the just confusion and chaos in someone's heart.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember one time it was just my sister and I in the house and they were gone, and we found a briefcase under their bed, and there was a key that was in his dresser. You know, we found that key, opened the briefcase, and it was magazines of guys. And I don't remember going through a bunch of them, and I don't remember them being super X-rated, but what is seared in my memory is this image of a very attractive man in a soaked white t-shirt. It's kind of a white t-shirt, a wet t-shirt contest type thing. And I thought, you know, that's the image that my dad is looking at when he's inside, you know, locking himself in this room. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, again, it brings up all of these questions that come up. Like, is that how I'm supposed to be? Do I need to look that certain way? Do I need to have the strength that person does? That expression, which I didn't quite understood what that meant. But I know that God is not a God of confusion. Talk about a contrast there. He is a God that comes towards us. He's got an open door policy all the time. And it took me a long time to learn that, you know, because I just put my father's face on top of God. It makes a lot of sense that you would do that. Yeah, and I did. I thought if my dad was disinterested in me, then probably God was too. And I really believed that I was kind of on my own in life. That maybe God could help me, but he didn't really care. Or maybe he wasn't strong enough. My dad wasn't very strong. So maybe, you know, God really couldn't, you know, do something for me, even if he wanted to. I don't know that I voiced that out loud, but that's, if you look at my behavior, that is what it would be reflecting some of those views. And it took a long time to say, you know what, my father and God are completely two different people. And, you know, God comes towards me, and he comes towards me not just in my pain or the abuse, but in the sin that I committed over the years, whether through pornography or fantasy. And, you know, God, he doesn't run from us. You know, Adam and Eve, they sinned, but God went towards them. He covered them. When I did something wrong, I felt like, you know, I got punished for it, even if it wasn't anything actually wrong. I just was saying the wrong thing or speaking up when apparently I wasn't supposed to. But, you know, we are not people that get punished. That's not in God's nature. And that's something else I had to learn as well.
Yes. Tell us, so going off to college, now college is a time when people are kind of making their choices, you know, for them, their own life now, forging their own path. What were some of the moments where the world was shouting at you that, oh, if you have same-sex attraction, that's just gay, so that's who you need to be. That's what they tell us. And you can be, you know, that's where authenticity happens and you can be yourself and that's who you are. But then you ultimately didn't believe some of those lies and you took a different path than your father did and then the world tells you to. And so what were some of those moments of temptation and the enemy dangling the forbidden fruit in front of you and telling you that it'll be okay? God gave you, through his grace, gave you clarity.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at first it just seemed like, you know, my body, my nervous system, all of a sudden brought up these huge sensations and emotions that I hadn't quite experienced on that level before in college. I just couldn't ignore it anymore. And I think it was like, all right, Jason, you think connecting with guys is going to be the answer to feeling separate and different and, you know, not having what it takes? Well, we can really connect, you know, with somebody beyond us being friends or admiring them. And that was super scary. I didn't know what quite to do with that. And then I remember, you know, one guy in college, you know, almost as flippantly, he said that I was gay. This was, you know, different than another time where when two guys sat me down for dinner and had a more serious conversation about it. But so I asked the guy, well, why do you think that? And he said, well, you know, because of that jacket you always wear. And I guess I had this like leather jacket that I thought was just super cool. And I thought, you know, made me like one of the guys. But apparently it was a dead giveaway for my identity or my attractions. And so that was really confusing that, you know, people would, you know, judge me in that way. And it made me really paranoid. Like, gosh, who else thinks that? And then it was appealing to think, well, I guess, you know, people do interact and have sex with other guys, you know, get close to them. And I did. I had a draw towards that. So beyond just those initial sensations, that idea, then over time, it was a real temptation that I had to guard and be aware of. And I was grateful that my good Christian boy persona trumped that temptation to go into that. That kept me safe being a good Christian. And I don't know what I would have done if I didn't keep that up. That's what held me together. Terrible reason, you know, not to go into the lifestyle. You know, there's much better proactive life-giving reasons to choose something better, but it did protect me. I also knew that somehow going in that direction was going to put me into a black hole that I wouldn't know how to get out of. I just knew that it was going to make me feel, you know, something that I wanted to feel so badly. And I was going to get to escape some really uncomfortable feelings at the same time. But I knew it would just be covering up and covering over some of the things that were deeper going on within me that I knew I had to deal with, you know, somehow. And so I just was afraid to go that direction, and you know, I didn't dive into that. But I did struggle with porn. I did, you know, have romantic feelings for a couple guy friends, and you know, that's really tough to try and navigate what that is going to look like. And you know, can I be a friend to a guy in a really healthy way and go deep with that, or is something, you know, broken and really wrong with me that I need to you know, fix, pretend isn't there. There's so many things that were hard enough as a kid without then having these same-sex attractions come on the scene, and add that to the list of things that caused me to feel, you know, separate than other people. So enemy is real. Spiritual warfare is a real thing, and he's constantly trying to take us out of the running. So even though he wasn't able to get me to dive head first in the gay lifestyle, he was able to keep me at bay from really making progress towards the kingdom of God and not burying my talents in the sand by just putting on all kinds of different masks around all kinds of different people and, you know, playing the right role that I felt I had to play in life. Somebody recently asked me, you know, Jason, what's your goal for your clients? And I think he was coming from the place of, well, probably just making sure they don't sin, right? But I said, you know, my goal is so that they won't bury their talents in the sand. I felt like I did that, you know, so much of the time. And I could do that by, you know, jumping into sin, which is just choosing anything besides God for what only he should be providing, or, you know, playing some kind of role as the perfect Christian. And, you know, that's hiding my talents in the sand, when first I have to acknowledge that there's something special there, you know, dig them up and then live them out courageously.
Absolutely. That is powerful, because I see so many men where they're really just paralyzed, and they, you know, maybe don't give into the lifestyle. Maybe it's they're doing it somewhat secretly. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe it's just attractions that they're dealing with. But they play the part of a good Christian man, but it paralyzes them. I love that analogy of burying their talents. And they're never able to then fully come alive and live for the things that God would have them live for and make the impact on the kingdom that they're able to, because they're living in fear and shame and hiding because they're afraid that someone will see what's going on inside of them. And it's just, it becomes about behavior management and not actually dealing with what's going on in their heart.
Yeah. And that's not life-giving. I heard somebody ask recently, I think it was on a podcast, they talked about, are your goals that a dead person could achieve? And they use different examples for that. And some I might use are, I want my same-sex attractions to go away. I don't want temptation anymore. I want to stop using porn. And, you know, that's fine to have those desires, but don't we really want something greater than that? Those can be protective, you know, those can maybe help us out and help us to feel safer. But if that's our only goal, then that's missing so much of life. Like, I want to be somebody that in the place of temptation, in the place of confusion, I can choose something that is true and make steps courageously with that. And then I can have, you know, goals that are even bigger than that. I can say, you know, how do I want people to feel when they're in my presence? How do I want to communicate life to the people around me? Not in some fake way, not memorizing some script, but getting to a place where I feel fully accepted by God. I'm okay with who I am as a work in progress, that I can love life right now. And from that place, you know, how do I truly want to give? So I think it's okay to deal with the hard stuff, but we also have to have something pulling us forward.
Absolutely. Because then you're in a place where you can actually be life-giving to other people, because it's not about just my own earning something from them, trying to be accepted of them, putting on an image for them, or hiding in shame from them. And so there can be such a shift from my own insecurities and guarding them to, I have everything I need in Christ, and therefore, how can I invest in other people and build the kingdom? And what a wonderful shift in, you know, aspect of growth to happen in your life.
Yeah. And it's just a gift from God, happened over time, and it's still happening, you know, right? We're all, you know, going to next level of what God has for us. But kind of go back to college. Somehow I got through that. I ended up having a nervous breakdown towards the end of college. And I think it was because I was trying to hold on so tight to these different parts that I was playing. I was asking all the time, who do you need me to be? And that's exhausting. You know, we're not made to live that way. And it was stressing me out to finish architecture school, to, you know, continue on and to go into the next phase of life. And I wound up in the emergency room. Thankfully, it was short-lived, and I was able to finish undergrad and get to Dallas and start a career. But man, you know, that left a mark. And it did get me into recovery, though. And one of the blessings and the gifts that my dad gave me was encouraging me to get into a 12-step group. He started to work on his alcoholism and some of his sex addiction by going to SA and AA. And he did set an example for the family of that. And he really made a lot of efforts. And so I appreciate that. And it was a beautiful time when I started to be able to be fully known for all of me, you know, not editing. And I remember sitting down with my sponsor and just saying, so, you know, I have these attractions. This happened when I was young. You know, I've done this. And he's just like, okay, uh-huh. Tell me more. You know, like there's no shock on his face. There was no, just stay here. I'll be right back. And then he never returns type of thing. But it was the most amazing thing to be able to just say, here I am. And he's just kind of invited me in. And he's actually one of the ones that put words to the abuse that I experienced, because I had a tendency to, I minimized it. And I didn't like to think of it as sexual abuse. And he used that word, you know, for the first time. It was hard to hear, but he did it in a way that was kind and loving. And that opened me up to say, gosh, you know, maybe there is more healing. I was able to put a framework to it to move into greater healing. But he was just a gift in my life that really helped me to see God a little bit more accurately. You know, so I feel like the face that he had when he was listening to me and speaking, I feel like that's a lot closer to what the face of God looked like. And that was just a really healing place for me. And I felt answer to a lot of questions that I tried to get answered, you know, from other guys or from fantasy or from porn. You know, he said to me without using the words that, hey, I'm better off when you're around. You belong. You're worth knowing. You're not too much. And we have the gift to give that to people. You know, we can help it to feel
at least life-giving words.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what people need. You know, so if you have a loved one that is in a place where maybe they're just experiencing a lot of confusion, you know, get alongside them, be in the fog with them, and understand what their big questions are. And it may not be whether I should go into the gay lifestyle or not. Maybe that's one of them, but there's probably a lot more that are underneath that. That they just want somebody to be able to answer with, yes, yes, I see you. Yes, you're enough in Christ. Yes, people are better off when you're around. And so then, you know, as I kind of moved forward in my career, I got a lot steadier by going into recovery. I did go into a small group counseling session for a period of time for men who were sexually abused as children. And that gave me a lot of power, a lot of steadiness, a lot of clarity, so that I was able to go and have a meeting with my dad and tell him, hey, here are all the things that I remember. Here's how I believe that they impacted me. And that was important for me to have a relationship with him. And I knew that was a huge, you know, barrier for it. It wasn't something I had to do, but it was important to me. And he did own up to all of it. And, you know, yeah, that was great. Yeah, he was not a perfect person. I mean, we could have prosecuted him when we were young, done all of that. I don't know that it really occurred to us, but there's definitely that there. And I was angry with my dad so much, worked through a lot of grief and anger. But it's nice that I can see him now and, you know, get to a place where, you know, and God did it. I remember waking up one day and thinking, oh, you know, I wonder how Dad is doing. And that was after a while of, you know, wrestling with the abuse, after he, you know, left the family to go into the gay lifestyle after I finished graduate school, and saying to God, I don't know how you're going to want to get me into a place where I can have, you know, true forgiveness for him. You know, I can say it in my head and forgive my dad, but I don't want to fake it. And I believe that, you know, God did that. I cared about my dad. You know, he went off into the lifestyle. Again, at the same time that I was about ready to look more closely at my same-sex attractions after I, you know, got stable from depression and anxiety. And I went into Living Hope, which was a group here in the DFW area for people that are navigating same-sex attraction, and had really the most beautiful times, just one of the greatest experiences of my life. And that might seem strange to say that, you know, going into a group like that, but I probably was not unlike my dad going into the gay community and being instantly accepted and kind of instantly, you know, known, like just kind of understood him, at least, you know, a great part of him. And I felt that way too. It's like, man, these people could just finish my sentences. It feels like I don't have to explain all that goes on in my head. sometimes when I have these attractions or comparisons to other guys. And it was so freeing. And I was able to get to a place over time where I could just honestly say, I don't even want to kiss a girl. I remember saying that clearly. And I was able to hold really loosely the hope and the desire that I had to marry a woman, even though a lot of confusion about how would that happen without these strong sexual desires, you know, towards a woman, or when I'm not sure that I'm going to be man enough for her, or is she going to reject me when she learns about my attractions? And, you know, I really left it open-handed. There was a time that I wanted the confusion to stop. I wanted to say, God, I'm not going to get married. I'm just going to stay single and be done with wondering if this is possible. You know, I didn't want to be uncomfortable anymore. But I recall just a catch in my spirit and just believing that, okay, that's not my decision to make. You know, God decides my future. You know, we work together on it. I can say that, you know, I don't want to get married. You know, David said so many things to God in the Psalms, honestly and openly with emotion. Say, this seems like a terrible idea, God. Don't sign me up for this. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know how many dreams in life where I got married to a woman and then I got it annulled in that dream. But I said, hey, you know, I'm open to what you have. And
I think that's so important because, you know, we have to be careful as we're walking alongside guys with same-sex attraction to not idolize marriage, to not make it out to be their hope or that they're not complete without marriage. They have everything they need in Christ. But I think too many times guys just close that off as a possibility because it's just too uncomfortable or there's too much. It's hard to think about the what ifs and keep that door open and possibly pursue it, not knowing how that's going to work out with same-sex attraction. And so it's easier to just close the door, say, I'm going to be single forever. And I was there at some point and maybe be closed off to a really great, amazing blessing or even act of obedience that God might have for us.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really important just to believe that anything is possible. And it's hard to hold that belief. But I think it allows us to show up a little bit more vulnerably, a little bit more authentically in the present. So I have to believe that the best is yet to come. That's one of my core beliefs, that the best is yet to come in life. You know, God says that no eye has seen, no ears heard, no mind has imagined what God has in store for those that love him. So I may say, you know, God, I want to be married to a woman. And you know, if that's what he has, he's just going to give that right back to me. And if that's not what he has, I have to believe that it's going to be something even better because I know that that verse is true. And when I believe that I have a compelling future, even if I'm not sure exactly what it is, I can imagine some beautiful things and give those to God. But I think that allows me to show up more fully alive in the present. It gives me, you know, greater energy and capacity to do some of that deeper work that we can do when we are working through some of the hard things in the growth process, looking at our past and our beliefs and our feelings. I think that's just a requirement. That's what a lot of my work is, along with honoring our story and finding our voice, is charting a future of purpose and possibility. I think that maybe is a piece that's missing sometimes in working with guys. A lot of the same-sex attraction work is around trauma, which is absolutely, you know, necessary and powerful. It was for me. But I think there has to be a lot of work done on imagining a beautiful future.
And I think what are you working towards and not just working against?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. You know, the name of your podcast is Own Your Identity. And so I want to take a moment and talk about identity in a world where we're so quick to attach labels and make our identity something. And obviously with same-sex attraction, the world tells us that we're just gay. That's who we are. And how did you have clarity that that identity is not going to take you to a good place, or that's not going to be healthy to attach your identity to a label like that?
Well, I think labels are limiting, first of all, and I just don't want to be limited. So I had somebody recently, you know, say that I was in a mixed orientation marriage. And I just felt like, gross.
I hate that phrase.
Oh my gosh.
Because it's like, even though sometimes I still have hints of same-sex attraction and I have to explore that, take it to the Lord. It's like, that's not my orientation and who I am. It's like they're pitting me and my wife into these completely different worlds. And so it's like, no, like, please do not use mixed orientation marriage to describe us.
And I just say that because that was fairly recent. And so I remember what I felt in my body, like this, this tightening, closing up, like, type of feeling. And, you know, that's how I felt too, when I thought about, you know, taking on a label of gay. That just didn't, you know, feel good to me. I wanted to say I'm a man and I experience same-sex attraction. I do. I think it's really important to view these sensations, these romantic feelings, these patterns of thinking as experiences, you know, that we're having, something we can observe. They don't get to tell us, you know, who we are or what to do. And I get to say that, you know, my identity is in Christ. My coaching, you know, program, Own Your Identity, the podcast, it has two meanings. And one is, the deeper meaning is who I am in Christ and really getting clarity on that, knowing what that is and owning it. And the second is a little tongue in cheek. It's like, I get to own my sexual identity. Nobody gets to tell me that I'm gay. You know, the culture doesn't get to say what I get to do. My body doesn't get to tell me, what my orientation is. I'm in charge. And, you know, as a believer in Christ and somebody that's smart, I'm going to let, God put his hands on mine as, you know, we chart my course together. But I think it's really important that we don't allow our attractions to feel so big. And that happens so much of the time. That's one of the biggest things I work on first with guys, is to look at the story that they're telling themselves or allowing the enemy to tell them about what their attractions mean, about who they are, how God sees them, and what's possible in life. Because it's not necessarily those sensations, or those feelings themselves, but again, it's the meaning that we give to them. It's like I said earlier, and when we give them the power, rather than saying that, you know, we've got the power, Christ has the power, then that's where we get upside down and it feels overwhelming.
Absolutely. And we tend to make everything in our life and our walk with the Lord evolve around that. And, you know, number one goal for so many guys is that, deal with same-sex attraction, make it go away, you know, whatever that looks like. And they're really, really stunted because they're giving it more power in their life than they need to. And I've seen that, you know, we need to grow in all areas of our life. And when we're hung up just in hyper-focus on that one area, it really can really stunt our growth and our relationship with God. And it's not a very healthy place. And so we don't want to completely ignore it, but we also don't want to just hyper-focus on that one area of life. I know we're so much more than our sexuality. It's a big, big piece of us. There has to be some wisdom and some healthy balance there of, I'm not going to ignore that. I'm going to press into it. I'm going to seek the Lord in this, seek wise counsel, counseling, whatever it is. But I'm so much more than these feelings I'm having.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes we don't even realize how much we're letting them affect our life. I created something called SSAquiz.com that allows us to understand the impact that our story that we're telling ourselves about our attraction is having on our courage, energy, influence, productivity, clarity. And, you know, those are really important pieces of being an effective, powerful person in life. And it's really been great to hear the impact that simple quiz has made on guys that say, gosh, I didn't really think about this area of my life being impacted so much. And then I give them...
I just brought it up, and I will fill out the quiz for them soon when we're done.
Okay, yeah. Perfect score is a 75. Just FYI, so let me know what you get.
That sounds good.
Yeah, but it was really cool to create that. I don't think there's anything out there quite like it. And it's really powerful to be able to say, okay, gosh, I see kind of where I'm at. This is not a quiz that says how attracted you are to other guys. It's about how much you're allowing that to to impact how you show up in the world. And, you know, from there, say, all right, I really want to give more. I don't want to bury my talents in the sand. I see that I am. You know, there's so much more than I'm giving. And my attractions don't have to go away, you know, for me to live the life that I feel like is going to make an impact, you know, right now. And that's really a powerful, you know, thing to do and a place to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I think that I see a lot of guys, and I've always had to figure out this balance too of on one of two extremes of I have to make these attractions go away right now to live my life, or like it's too hard to even dig into that area. So I'm just going to accept them, almost like celebrate them, right? And that's where you get a lot of the kind of gay identity aspects too. But sometimes it's, yeah, we get to one extreme or the other of because the middle, many times the middle ground is the place where we really have to rely on God. And yeah. I'm going to say, I'm going to be open to this, but I'm not going to hyper focus, and I'm going to trust God in this process. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really have to be on our knees and trusting God and trust that He has something good in for us, and He can give us clarity. And we don't need to make our attractions who we are and part of our identity. And at the same time, we can continue to grow even when they're still there, and we can acknowledge that and press into it and engage with it and try to understand.
Yeah. There's so much opportunity in that middle ground, in that fog, like I talked about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God wants to meet us and hold our hand in it. And we get to learn
absolutely
what we believe, who God is, and what He has for us, and get closer to Him through it. So I invite anybody that feels like they're in the middle ground to, hey, let's just be open to what this time in your life has to give you, because I think it has a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we're running out of time, I want to really extrapolate just one other topic that maybe it doesn't feel related to same-sex attraction, sexuality, but I'm so encouraged by this part of your story that I want to talk about it. And that's just the love and forgiveness that you have towards your father. And so, you know, I've heard it throughout just our conversation. It's like, there were some hard aspects of your childhood, and then he went off and left family and lived a life of sin. And yet you still continue to honor him and love him. And even though you were going down a different path of choosing the Lord, and I think that that's remarkable, because I don't see that in our culture very much. We live in a culture where we cut everyone off, and, you know, we're supposed to cut out toxic people. And I think sometimes we overcorrect in our culture, where we make everything, we call everything abusive. But I don't want to undermine abuse. Like, we should call abuse abuse. And so I see families cutting one another off, and it's kind of the trendy to cut off your parents and not have a relationship. And so I just wanted to understand, like, what did God do in your life to allow you to love your dad, even though there were hard things, and even though he was far from perfect and caused a lot of pain for you and multiple other people, you still loved him and honored him and valued him and cherished him. And so, what are some words of encouragement on how we can do that? And I see the gospel in that. And I think that's a work that only God can do in us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, boundaries are a good thing. So definitely, yes, you know, absolutely. Set boundaries if you need to. But I think it goes a little bit to the dead person goals versus living goals. You know, I could say, all right, I'm going to forgive my dad because I'm not supposed to be angry. And, you know, I don't want kind of that negativity. But I believe that what God wanted was closeness between me and him. And he wanted me to make sure I'm putting my energy towards moving forward in life. And so, when I didn't force forgiveness, like I mentioned, but I just opened it and I said, God, I'm pissed. I don't know, you know, what you're going to do with all of this. But I want to know you more. I think the reason we're here on earth is to know Christ more and to make him known. And, I don't want to waste my life, to be honest. And so, where can I put my energy in a way that's going to, move me closer to God and move me forward? And it wasn't going to be sitting, continually upset and dogging on my dad. It was going to be choosing love instead. And that was a slow, gracious process, but that's given me more openness, more life, more fullness, and just allowed me to accomplish a lot more, to see a lot more in life, and to be able to touch a lot more people. Not because I generated it, but because I welcomed it. I was willing to have love start to come a little bit closer to my anger and grief and sadness, which was all totally fine too. And, eventually that started to color more of those feelings, and love is the most powerful thing.
Absolutely. And so it was, you chose love, and that's awesome. And we don't want to minimize, sometimes we have to set boundaries, and boundaries are good, but we have to let the Lord do some work in our hearts. And there's a lot more peace and in our life when we choose to love people. So that is awesome. Jason, we're running out of time. I want to end with, how can people connect with you? What do you offer? I know you have a lot of clients, do coaching, you walk alongside men who are struggling. What all do you offer, and how can people connect? And we'll put some of those links in the show notes.
Yeah. The best way to find out a little bit more about me is to go to ownyouridentitynow.com. It has a page with links to my podcast, Own Your Identity. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. I do one-on-one coaching with men who experience same-sex attraction and want to live a life of greater purpose and possibility. I also have a group coaching course where we find our voice, honor our future, honor our story, and chart our future. I have an on-demand course as well, and a lot of other content on there, blog articles. And I would just love to connect. You're welcome to shoot me an email as well if you'd like. It's hello@jasonmallard.com. And shoot me a message. I would love to hear your story and provide a little bit of hope and guidance, whatever God would have for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Make sure you check that out. So, all right, everyone, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Calibrate Conversations. Again, if you're listening on a place like Spotify, we'd appreciate a 5-star review. Leave a kind comment. Let us know how this time with Jason has encouraged you. We would love to hear about that, and feel free to reach out if there is anything that we can do. All right, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brady.